If you didn't receive a handout, put up your hand and you'll receive one. And you'll know in which direction our brother Duran is going in. My cogitations which trouble me. Daniel 7:28. We seem to be in Daniel today. And so we'll hear what Brother Duran has to say and listen intently. Brother David.
Thanks. It's nice to be back. We have three hostesses this time. Sister Joy Candle and Sister Alice Schneider and Sister Marilyn Benda have all been heaping us with everything we need and things we don't even need. And we're very grateful for it. You do have an outline. Your brethren in Louisville area send their love to you, my mother most especially. And the title, My Cogitations Much Troubled Me, comes from Daniel, King James Version, last verse of chapter 7. We are going to look at chapter 7 today. And as you can see on your outline, it says introduction. So let's introduce. Why this subject? Sometimes somebody asks me, why'd you pick that for a convention? And there's a very easy reason. I got a call from someone, one of the brethren, a few weeks ago, asking me about Daniel 7. And we started talking, and we didn't finish talking, but after we hung up, I started looking into it. And I don't know about everybody here, but sometimes you go for years and years and years making assumptions about certain verses, and you use them all the time, and then later on you take a look at the context and you think, oh my goodness, I'll relook at that. And so that's what I did, is took a relook at some of the details of Daniel 7. Not that the outcome is that much different, but the way I would interpret certain phrases and verses is very different. So that's what we're going to do, is look at some deeper contextual examination. Now, before we start, I want to speak a little bit about the Gentile times. You have on the back of your outline a little thing called an aside, which we'll look at in a minute. But I just want to say a couple things. Because we get into trouble with too much generalizations at times. You know, Gentile times ended in 1914. And as significant as 1914 is in the Lord's plan, sometimes it gets in our way. You know, it's relatively rare and obscure date in Scripture. Matter of fact, if it weren't for the Lord making mention of it in Luke, and then are going digging to find out where on earth he got the phrase, and the fact that certain Daniel prophecies focus in on it, we probably would have ignored 1914 in the Scriptures. Even 1874 is a relatively rare and obscure date in Scriptures, as important as it happens to be. The big date is 1799. That is all over the Bible. And we saw part of that this morning in Brother John's discourse. I think it's the singular most prominent date in the Bible, and I've often wondered myself why Brother Russell didn't stick it on the chart. It's terribly important. If your memory works like mine frequently does not, you may recall that Daniel 4 and 5 deal with Babylonish kings, and they point directly to 1914, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, and the handwriting on the wall chapters. And they deal directly with 1914 because it is the end of their power over Israel. So those two chapters really do pinpoint the end of the times of the Gentiles. And I would like to stress this. 1914, or the times of the Gentiles, is about Israel. It's not about Gentiles. the fact that we call it the times of the Gentiles, nice convenient thing because it does come from scriptures, but it's not about Gentiles. It's about Israel, a Jerusalem being trodden down until this certain time has expired. It's not about the Gentiles. It's not about the apostate church, even though it has an effect on them. Now, Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, you know, the image of four metals and the four beasts. Well, they incorporate the time of Gentile rule. They don't aim at 1914 because their objective, those two chapters, 2 and 7, their objective is to aim at the peaceable kingdom, which I'm going to refer to as the dotted line. There's no chart up here. In Chicago yet. Anyway, I think you know what I mean on the chart. I'm simply going to refer to the peaceable kingdom as the dotted line, so you'll know what I mean when I say dotted line. Even in Daniel 9, where we have the parallels of the 70 weeks, indicates 1914 in an accommodated sense. Now, that's where your little aside comes in here, the back of your outline. And I don't know that you've ever noticed this, but I think it's important. So let's just look at that. Note the simultaneous import and yet chronological suppression of 1914 in Daniel 9, 23 to 27. Just call on your memory here. You don't have to look at the text. In verse 25, it talks about Messiah's presence. The parallels 29 and 74. That's the end of the 69th week. It talks about it in chronological terms. Then it has the verse 27, the judgment of rejection. That's 33 and 78. And it does that in chronological terms, too. It calls it the midst of the week. Then in verse 27, it talks about the end of special favor in 36 and 81. And it does that in chronological terms. It calls it the end of the 70th week. But when it talks about the destruction in verse 26, that's 69 and 1914, it does not relate it to the 70-week prophecy. It does not talk about it in chronological terms. There are no numbers there at all. It just says the prince will come and destroy the city. And back at the first advent, they didn't know when that was till it happened. Brother Russell knew when it was because he knew about Gentile times. But there is no question here that the Lord, for some reason, chooses to separate chronological references from event references. 1914 is not part of the 70-week parallel. It's not mentioned chronologically in Daniel 9. Conclusion, this seems to indicate that though the Daniel Gentile times prophecies are related to the Jewish double, they are separate and should not be used to hold captive the visions of Daniel 2 and 7 to a 1914 time reference. Okay, so much for that. Now let's go to our subject. Fasten your seat belts and open to Daniel 7. You really want to have your Bible open, because there are details that, unless you're one of those people with a photographic memory, would probably escape your memory. Still under the introduction, I'm going to mention two things. I am a firm believer in the old maxim: the Old Testament is the New Testament concealed. The New Testament is the Old Testament revealed. In other words, if you want to understand Daniel, Revelation is going to tell you about him. If you want to understand Revelation, Daniel's not going to tell you about it. It's one way and one way only. And I think we get very strange cogitations, to use a word of Daniel, when we try to interpret New Testament prophecy by Old Testament passages. Revelation is simple if you compare it to Old Testament prophecies. You need the new to explain the old. In Daniel 7, I have noted here some construction markers. Very quickly, they're basically Daniel saying what he was looking at. The words are not always the same, but I know what I need. My glasses. One more. I keep forgetting how old I'm getting. In Daniel 7, very quickly notice, verse 2, I was looking. Verse 4, I kept looking. Verse 5, behold. Verse 6, I kept looking. Verse 7, I kept looking. Verse 8, while I was contemplating. Verse 9, I kept looking. Verse 11, then I kept looking. And also twice in that verse, I kept looking until the beast was slain. Verse 13, I kept looking. And verse 21, I kept looking. I don't think that's just Daniel trying to fill up space. I think they're construction markers. I was doing the New American Standard. I think King James has equivalencies. Okay. Yes, I will be using the New American Standard. I think in a couple cases we may have to refer to the King James. We're going to try to look at this chapter, not in full detail, we don't have time, but in some of its more important little details to see if we can pin markers on it and see who is there at what time and what it is they're doing. Okay, outline of Daniel 7. Roman numeral 1, the vision itself. In other words, Daniel saw something. This is verses 1 through 14. Scan it with me. He says in Belshazzar's first year, he was laying in bed and he saw something in his mind. He wrote it down. And here's the summary. He saw, verse 2, the four winds were striving on the sea and something happens. I'm going to go quick here. We have four great beasts coming out. The first, verse 4, like a lion, and tells what it did. Verse 5, another beast, like a bear, tells what it did. Verse 6, another one like a leopard, describes it. Verse 7, after this, I kept looking in the night visions, and a fourth beast with 10 horns. And the eighth verse, while I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them, and three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it, and behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth uttering great boasts. Now, I want to stress this point in those first 8 verses. This prophecy is clearly about more than 4 beasts. Most notably, and most troubling to Daniel, is it was about this little horn. So we're going much beyond the concept of 4 Gentile powers. We've got 4 Gentile powers here. But more than anything, it evolves into this thing called a horn. A very strange horn indeed. So verse 1 through 8 is the history of Gentile powers and the papacy. I'm going to stress the and in that. History of Gentile powers and the papacy. Because this entire view of prophecy, and this is a self-contained chapter, is not really dealing with the Gentile times. This is dealing with history from Daniel's day until the kingdom's established. That's its point. That's what Daniel really wants to know. Throughout the book of Daniel, that's what Daniel wants to know. And it's nice to know that these four things have to come and go before you get there. But there's more detail needed. Hence John's talk this morning. We need more detail than to know there are four universal empires, and when he gets struck on the foot, that's it, baby. That's not it, baby. There's more to come. Okay. 9 to 12. The destruction of the entirety. By this I mean these next four verses, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yes, four verses are going to talk about how all four of these beasts and the horn will be destroyed. Let's look. I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat, his vesture was like white, etc., etc. A river of fire was flowing, verse 10. Thousands upon thousands were attending him. The court sat and the books were open. Then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and his body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. And as for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. Interestingly enough, Daniel doesn't put it in order. Well, maybe he does. But the point is, it's in the middle of those verses that he talks about that horn thing. That's really bothering me. He says, I kept looking because of this boastful words which his horn was speaking. And then my attention went back to the beast and I saw how they were destroyed. So the horn is on his mind and it's related to the beast somehow. But the horn is the thing. Now, I mentioned earlier, I believe, in that little saying up there in the introduction section. So, let's see what the New Testament reveals about what the Old Testament conceals. I think we can find in the book of Revelation itself references to a number of the things in these 9 to 12 verses that we just read. Verse 9. I kept looking until thrones were set up. Revelation 20, verse 4, talks about thrones being set up or cast down, depending on your translation. It's clearly an 1874 reference. Revelation 11:15. I'm going to put myself a marker back here. You know the text very well. The seventh angel sounded, the kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever. Doesn't talk about throne in that specific word, but it also suggests 1874. So my interpretation of Daniel 9 is, Daniel said, I kept looking, and then I saw 1874. Thrones were set up. And the Ancient of Days, you remember Daniel 11:15? The kingdom of this world has become the kingdom of our Lord. That's Jehovah. And that's the part that justifies this. The Ancient of Days took his seat. And it says, and of his Christ. But it is the beginning of Jehovah's reign. There's no question about that. So this is an 1874 date in Daniel 7:9. The Ancient of Days took his seat. It describes him. We won't go through that. Verse 10. I believe Revelation 5, 11 through 14 relates to it. Let me read those verses. In verse 10, you have the church being made priest to our God and reigning upon the earth. And verse 11 is going to comment on that. It's not back where Revelation 5 actually happens. It's looking forward to the kingdom. And I looked and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne and the living creatures and the elders. And the number of them was myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands, saying, "Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches," and so on. "And every created thing which is in heaven and on earth and the sea and all things in them, I heard saying, to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing, honor, glory, dominion forever." Okay, that's a progressive section there. But it starts from the beginning of the reign and goes into the reign. But you will notice what accompanies it. I'm going back now to Daniel 7:10. Thousands upon thousands were attending him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him. It's the same picture. Therefore, verse 10 is suggesting 1874 to the dotted line. Now, why do I say to the dotted line? Because it says the books were opened. Daniel chapter 20, when you get the mediatorial phase of the kingdom, the books were open, and the dead were judged out of the things written in the books. So you have progression here from 1874 to the dotted line. That's Revelation 20:12, right there on your outline. Revelation 7:11. "Then I kept looking." Now, this is one reason earlier why I said those construction markers, because this doesn't happen after the books are open. But Daniel is trying to say, okay, I get the point. God's going to take his power, and it's going to get to the place where the books are open, the dead are going to be judged. But he says, you know what? I still have to know about that horn. You haven't told me about it. Matter of fact, he hasn't even asked yet for an explanation. That's coming. So, verse 11. "I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking." Daniel said, you know, he can't get away with that. You can't go saying all those things and just get ignored. "I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire." Now, if you take the time, I'm not going to do it now, to read Revelation 17:16, you're going to have this very same arrangement where the beast that came up out of the abyss, which John talked about this morning, devours the harlot. And then the beast is taken care of and you never see it again. So again, we have right here, in chapter 11, in Daniel's vision, he doesn't know what it's talking about, but he is seeing chapter 17 of Revelation. It suggests all the way up to the dotted line. Now 13 and 14 in Daniel 7. "I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming." You notice he keeps shifting here. You're going back to different dates, just like in Revelation when it says, "And I saw, and I heard, and I saw," and all those markers that shift you forward or backward. Daniel's little marker is, "I kept looking." Took another look. "I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, and one like the Son of Man was coming, and he came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him, and to him was given a dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed." This is the replacement dominion. Daniel is aware that these four beasts are going to go. He's aware that the horn's going to go. And so the logical question is, what's going to take their place? And what's going to take their place is Jesus' kingdom, which is all that verses 13 and 14 are about. Revelation 14:14. "I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and sitting on the cloud was one like the Son of Man." It seems like the reference about I kept looking in the night visions and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming. So this dates it to 1874. Verse 14, Revelation 11:15, we already read. The kingdom or the dominion became the kingdom or dominion of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever. So that's from Revelation as our teacher. Daniel 7 becomes clear. Okay, now we've gone over the dream. Daniel didn't get it. He just told us what he saw. But now he gets smart and says, I need help. Please, somebody tell me what this is about. We've already suggested what it's about. But let's see what the result is. Roman numeral 2 on your outline. Daniel requests interpretation, verses 15 and 16. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. And I approached one of those who was standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. How nice. Isn't that delightful? If every time we had a question, we could just turn to somebody next to us and say, what's it mean? Well, Daniel was blessed. As we see at the end, he's still confused. My cogitations much troubled me. But he got the big picture. All right, the angel starts interpreting. Verses 17 through 27 is his interpretation. He starts out by just trying to give Daniel the big picture. Verses 17 and 18. The entire vision is going to be reduced to two verses. Here they are, 17 and 18. These great beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who will arise from the earth. But the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. That's lovely. That's a summary of the whole thing, isn't it? Would you have been happy with that one? Probably not. But it does make for us a point. And that point is, look, this is not about Gentile times. This is about the fact that those Gentile kingdoms may be filling time up, but this is taking us all to the place till the saints receive the kingdom, period. And all the other powers are gone. It takes us up to the dotted line. Okay, 19 to 22, Daniel does what we would have done. He complains. Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and the meaning of the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and before which three of them fell, namely, that horn which had eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts and which was larger in appearance than its associates. And I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the highest one. And the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. Okay, Daniel not only complains, but he complains specifically. He says, I sort of got the idea of the dream, but I want to know the fourth beast, those horns on it, but most specifically that one terrible one that pops up and seems to win until the Lord comes and puts the saints in power. Verses 23 to 27, the angel obliges. Let's take 23 and 4 first. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms, and it will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. And as for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue 3 kings. So the angel talks about the fourth beast and its horns. He basically says, okay, this fourth one, Rome, going to be so much more powerful than all the others. And it's going to sort of dissipate into what you know as Europe. 10 horns. But you also wanted to know about this strange one. Okay, let's look at it. 24 and 5. As for the 10 kings out of this kingdom, 10 kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones, and will subdue 3 kings, and he will speak out against the Most High, and wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. Now, if you were Daniel, would you be more worried about the fourth beast, or would you be more worried about the little horn? I suspect I'd be more worried about the little horn from what verse 25 says. Horrible description. Okay, I'm going to try to put some dates now, because Daniel's putting some dates, or the angel's putting some dates on it. Verse 25, notice carefully the wording. They will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. Now, if we want to be careful Bible students, let's not read too much into that. Let's also not read too little of it. It's saying there was a stranglehold. This horn had the power to grasp control over the saints until... what's the date? 1799. Yes, that's the big date in Daniel, and actually in most of the Bible. Okay. You want to know what happened as far as the little horn is concerned? When the time of the end comes, it tells you it loses its grasp. That's what it says. They will be in, saints will be into his hand until that time. It lost its grasp. I'm not interpreting. I'm just repeating in my own words what the verse is saying. Verse 26. But the court will sit. Now, we already saw earlier from Revelation the suggestion of what that means. The court sits in 1874. But the court will sit for judgment. The 40-year judgment against Babylon starts in 1874. And his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. Okay? Its dominion ended. To me, and I am interpreting here, that's the same as in Revelation, where it says Babylon is fallen, fallen. Two words, on purpose. Because twice in Revelation means not quite all. 3 times is totality. Twice is not quite all. And that's the case here. In 1874, the judgment is passed. But his dominion is taken away, fallen, fallen, in 1878. That doesn't mean he's gone. Doesn't mean he doesn't have any power. It means the greater part of his domination power has ended. Fallen, fallen. Dominion ended. It says that there. His dominion will be taken away. And then it says, annihilated and destroyed forever. Now, I think that's the destruction process, 1878, to the dotted line. The wording is a little strange to pin down. So before we get to verse 27, which is the nice one, I'm going to take a little tour through verse 26 to see if we can learn anything there. King James says, "But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it to the end." I like that. I like the King James wording of that. I don't know if it's accurate. It may be. But the reason I like it is, you know what it says. It's not repeating itself. It's saying to consume. What do you do when you consume? You nibble away until it's all gone. I really like that because it shows a process. To consume and to destroy it to the end, to the point where it isn't there anymore. So it shows from 1878 until you get to the dotted line, this slow consumption destruction process. Now, let me, before we go further, mention this. Verses 25 and 26. I'll read them again. "He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times and a half a time. But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated and destroyed forever." That's the angel's answer to a part of Daniel's dream in verses 21 and 22. So let me read those. "I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them until the Ancient of Days came. And judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom." So the angel in 25 and 26 is commenting on that part of Daniel's dream. It's real clear in that part of Daniel's dream that this consuming power lasts until the saints take the kingdom. Dotted line. That's one reason I like the King James when it says to consume and to destroy it to the end. And it's not as clear, certainly not in the New American Standard in 25 and 26 as it seems to be. But if you keep in mind that this is the angel's answer to verses 21 and 22 in Daniel's dream, it makes it a little clearer. Okay. Literally, verse 26 reads, "to annihilate and to destroy to the end." That's the literal Hebrew. Let me take those words, annihilate and destroy. The first one means exterminate. That doesn't help a whole lot, because sometimes exterminations take a while. Sometimes it's like that. But the very fact that the Lord's using two words, in my estimation, says, don't put them together and make them all one. Annihilate must mean something different from destroy. So again, I like the King James, consume and destroy. I think there's a process being shown here. The word destroy means make vanish, obliterate, or wipe out. That's pretty clear. The last one is termination to the nth degree. The King James, of course, uses consume instead of exterminate, implying a process. But the word means completely demolish, destroy, eradicate, totally destroy, utterly destroy. Now, that doesn't sound very much like process. But then again, I argue with myself. Why are there two words there? So I still like the process concept. Deuteronomy 6:15 uses the same Hebrew word, and it translates it, wipe you off the face of the earth. I think Paul was referring to this in 2 Thessalonians. And again, you probably know the text. You don't have to turn to it. But let me read it to you. In 2:8. When that lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will slay with the breath of his mouth and bring to an end by the appearance of his presence. King James says, somebody read it for me. What's it say? Verse 8, 2:8, 2 Thessalonians. Somebody have that? Consume with the spirit of his mouth, the meaning of his word, and destroy. So he has consume and destroy, which is exactly the words that we find in Daniel. So I think the apostle is making reference back to this very chapter we're looking at when he is here prophesying in 2 Thessalonians 2:8. The Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth. This does imply process, because the spirit of Jesus' words, the truth, is what really consumes the very foundation of Babylon. So I think process is the best answer, and I think we can rely again on the New Testament to interpret the Old when Paul says, consume with the spirit of his mouth and destroy with the bright shining of his parousia. It interprets it for us. Okay. The word forever, I guess, is important. Back to Daniel 7:26. The court will sit for judgment. His dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. The margin says, to the end. It is progressive, to the end, but it's also final. Forever. And I have no reason to quarrel with either meaning. So I think verse 7:26 comes down to this. One, well, let me back up to 7:25. The saints are taken out of the grasp of papacy in 1799. Next verse. His dominion is taken away. Well, let me back up. The court sits for judgment in 1874. His dominion is taken away in 1878 to destroy and make it vanish from that point to the dotted line. Forever. Goodbye, Babylon. Forever. As opposed to 6:26 in Daniel, he is the living God and enduring forever, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. Now, there is a dominion which will not end nor be consumed. Okay. And that leaves only verse 27. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions will serve and obey him. The peaceable kingdom arrives. That's the dotted line. Then in the King James, in the next verse, Daniel says, hitherto is the end of the matter. You got the whole picture. Although he says, as our title unfortunately has to repeat, my cogitations much troubled me. And I think maybe as brethren, our cogitations on this chapter still much trouble us. Left one thing out. Verse 12. As for the rest of the beasts, 1, 2, and 3, their dominion was taken away, one at a time. Babylon only reigned until Persia came in. Persia only kept going till Greece came in. Greece kept going only till Rome came in. Their dominion was taken away, but an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. In other words, the Lord did not wipe them off the face of the earth. The implication is, the remnants of Rome not only civil Rome, but holy Rome, in quotes. No extension of time. It's adieu. I can't believe I finished. I thought that was going to take a whole hour plus. Any questions?
You equated the beast in Daniel 7 with Revelation 17. But the beast in Daniel is not the scarlet colored beast of Revelation 17. And the other beast was all the little one.
Okay. Brother Tom's question is, which verse were we in, Tom? Do you recall?
7:11.
I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. Brother Tom's question is that I equated the beast here with the one in Revelation 17, and you're saying they're not the same thing. In a sense, they're the same thing. Please notice with care Daniel's words. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. In the French Revolution, the beast which came up out of the abyss, which we heard about this morning, was the people of the Roman Empire in France alone. So it was part of that fourth beast. It separated itself from the head. It was a body without a head. And so when we get to Revelation 17, we have the same thing happening. Still the same image which we have from Daniel. We've got a beast which has lots of heads on it. And we've finally got it without a head because all the heads are gone, all seven. Which I think was the case by the end of the Second World War. But the body of the beast, you know, the people form the body of the beast. Does your body do what your head tells it to do? More or less, yes, as much as you hate to have that happen. Fact is, you cut the head off and the body, well, you've seen decapitated chickens, have you not? Before they have, yeah, well, whether they're alive or not is sort of, well, those technical questions. But the moment the head gets cut off, they flop around the barnyard something awful for a prolonged period of time. We call that anarchy. And the body of the beast is the people. And, you know, when you lose your head, you got a problem. Well, the people have lost their head. Ever since the last attempt to have control over the whole populace of Europe, and maybe even more, which happened in World War II, the spread of concept toward, well, they'd call it liberty, we would call it anarchy, has been increasing. The horns don't disappear, the head does. So you finally in Revelation 17, when you get toward the end, verse 16, the 10 horns which you saw and the beast. The beast's still there even though it doesn't have a head anymore, Tom. And that's why Daniel's very specific to say, I saw till the beast was slain, but then its body had to be taken care of, had to be destroyed and given to the fire. So the 10 horns which you saw and the beast, these will hate the harlot. They'll make her desolate and naked. That's what happens to that horn. And will eat her flesh and burn her up with fire. And it doesn't tell you what happens to it, but the rest of this beast, and you have to look elsewhere, gets consumed with fire. so that it no longer exists and you have the end of anarchy. So, Tom, I think I may have generalized, but I think the picture is secure. Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? I never have time for questions.
Brother David, in verse 12, is there any specific chronological significance to the phrase that speaks to time and season? Could there be, or have you thought about that? Their lives were performed for a season and a time.
Oh, mine says for an appointed period of time. You're reading King James. I haven't considered that. Sorry, Brother Richard. Do you have an idea on it? Okay. It's probably got a meaning. Lord doesn't waste words. Anything else? Then I will quote Brother Jens Copeland, once an elder in Chicago. Verse the chairman, I'm too.